Advisory Committee meeting to order. This is Thursday, March 19, 2015. We're meeting at the Oceana Community Services District. Roll call, please.
Grover Beach member.
Here.
AG member.
Here.
The member at large.
Here.
Member from Oceana City.
Here.
And member from Pismo.
Here. Okay, the first item is public comments, an opportunity for members of the public to address items that are not on the agenda. Is there any public comment this evening? Seeing none, we'll move to item three, which is meeting minutes of November 2014 and January 15, 2015. Any corrections to those minutes?
I'll make a motion that we accept them.
Okay, I hear a motion. Do I hear a second? Okay, under comments, correction.
Yeah, okay, page 6 of 25 up there, it says H2C update, that's HCDX update.
Any other
Yes, I have one. Not a correction, maybe just a note. On page 7 of 25, item 10, it had indicated that I had made the note that Deputy Director Dave Flynn did most of the work on achieving the Public Works accreditation. I think I actually recognized the whole department and simply mentioned that at the very end, the big push was really led by Mr. Flynn, but I know that Will Clemens and everybody in the department was very active.
So it should read Deputy Director Dave Flynn and the rest of the department did most of the work. Is that the change?
You know, I just sort of want to make that acknowledgement. I'm not worried about modifying the minutes.
Oh.
But I did not attend the November meeting. I wasn't on the advisory committee, so I'll abstain on those minutes. When we take our vote, the motion included both. And
I believe your motion included both sets of minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, and so when I vote yes, I'm just clarifying that it will be an abstention on the November.
Okay, and we have committee member Brian Tiley just joined us. So
sorry, I'm late.
That's all right. We're going over the minutes of November 20, 2014, and January 15, 2015. Did you have any changes on those, Brian?
I do not.
Okay. All right. We have a motion to approve the minutes. I will be abstaining on both meetings since I did not attend.
And a nice second.
And we've got a second, so roll call, please.
Member Bright?
Yes.
Member Barnage?
Yes.
Member Hogan?
Yes.
Member Neary?
Yes.
Member Tyler?
Yes.
Chairman Waggy?
I'm abstaining. Okay, next item is operations report. Who's going to make the presentation? Joe's going to make it?
Yep. Good evening. My name is Joe Phillips.
Real quickly before Joe starts, where's the power button on this one? Thank you. Mr. Hutchinson handed out some new ops reports pages. These are to replace the ones that were in your agenda packet. They had some miscalculations, I believe it was on the Oceano CSD amount. Mark, you want to explain?
Yeah, just because of the drought situation, the staff is actually running parallel databases to test different thoughts and proposals and whatnot, and we inadvertently printed one of the pages from one of the test databases instead of the live database that is recording where we're actually at.
I'll follow up after Mr. Phillips' comments, if I might, on the changes.
Mark, on the new sheets, are they the same as the second email?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think we all got those. I got my copy of the changes.
All right. Of course, if anybody in the audience wants copies, we have them here.
Okay. Let's proceed then with the report.
Good evening. My name is Joe Phillips. I work for the Lopez Water Treatment Plant, County of San Luis Obispo, Public Works Department. Report operationally for Lopez Treatment Facility. We have a lake elevation at Lopez of 479.59 feet. Storage in acre footage is 19,499. Our capacity is 39%. Our rainfall to date is 9.29 inches. Our plant production is 4.63 MGD. Our filter turbidity range is 0.01 to 0.02. terminal reservoir visibility is all the way to the bottom, 23 feet. Downstream releases are 1.73 MGD, and our state water production is 1.5 million gallons. Are there any questions?
Any questions of staff?
I want to go back. Mark, can not of Joe, but Mark, you were providing the explanation on the differences between the January and February 2015 reports as compared to what was originally provided in the agenda package. And could you explain that again?
There's we've been working with Pismo Beach and Oceano, looking back in the spring and then through the winter at different mixes between state water and Lopez water to see how those would affect the reservoir and also the water supplies for the South County. And the easiest way to do that is to create a parallel database, go back in, enter the alternate numbers, and then see what it produces. That lets us model a month-by-month change in reservoir levels and everything to do with it. So I think there's actually two parallel databases at this point. And because the TAC has asked for a more detailed monthly report regarding state water deliveries and state water stored in the lake, we're also transitioning over to that. So you can see that the admin staff, you know, went to the third box down on the database, uploaded January, February, and thought that was the one. So we've made some corrections in titles and locations of things so we can get out the actual database as recorded by the operators versus the ones that the operational engineers are using to test various theories and approaches.
Okay.
I noticed, though, that on both sets of reports, they had been indicated that the data entered was by the same people. The January reports in both the original package as well as the revised information showed that Mr. Coleman worked on the January report and Mr. Phillips worked on the February report, so
yep.
From it sounds...
That should be the real report. I think what they did is copied over footers from the actual live database as well for the test databases.
Okay, so in terms of the revisions that were made and were sent out on Wednesday, that information on who entered the data may not be quite correct, because I think Coleman probably is already retired and is off-site.
Yeah, I think the ones I just handed out show Coleman for the January.
Yeah, and Mr. Phillips for February.
That should be accurate.
One of the reasons why I want to sort of impress this point a little bit is because what was delivered in the original agenda package is consistent with Oceano CSD Board of Directors' actions in December of 2014. And it's consistent with correspondence that we sent to the county in December, correspondence dated December 31st, 2014. We haven't received any written responses on that yet. So it is our position that the deliveries for Lopez water deliveries that were originally included in the agenda package and distributed in January are the correct water accounting, and that the revised information that was handed out and emailed out yesterday is incorrect information with regards to Oceano. And I'll leave it at that because I know that we have an agenda item later today that's going to address it in greater detail.
So we'll defer that discussion until that agenda item. Any other comments from the committee? Okay. Does that complete your operations report then?
Yes, sir.
Any comment from the public? Seeing none. Let's go on to information items. Number 5A. John, are you going to handle that one?
Yeah, so 5A is the climate update, and I've added an additional slide this meeting, that being the time series of the drought as mapped over the state of California and showing how it back in 2013 it actually started in San Luis Obispo County and expanded out through the entire state. And what we've been telling people is, even even if we do get rain, this drought monitor is based largely on precipitation data. Even if we do get rain, the drought will most likely retract back into San Luis Obispo County just because of our geographic location. So we'll have, when the drought is eventually over, we'll probably have had it persist here the longest out of any other region in the state of California. Then on the next pages, these are the more traditional slides you see where I look at temperature forecast and precipitation forecast. For the March meeting here, the graphic on the right, we're seeing they've increased their forecast for temperature throughout the state of California. It looks like cover pretty much the entire region of the Sierras. We have seen that. This has been pretty accurate this year with snow levels remaining really, really, really high. Elevation high, not level high. And then the last slide, sheet in your packet being the precipitation forecast. NOAA missed one. They're usually pretty accurate. They were pretty optimistic at our January meeting. We're going to see above average rainfall throughout the entire state of California, mimicking that El Nino forecast. Now in March, moving into their forecast for March, April, May, they're back to an equal chance of precipitation. So even though we're now officially in a scientific El Nino pattern based on sustained seawater temperatures, they can say we're officially in an El Nino. We didn't see the rainfall that 75% of the time occurs with an El Nino.
It's basically dry out there. Any questions from the committee? Okay, let's move on to Habitat Conservation Plan, HCP update.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director. You have a one-page update in your staff packet. The great news is that E-Corp, who's our hydrogeologic consultant, is on board under contract and moving ahead. They've received their formal notice to proceed. That means all contracts are signed, insurance is in place, and all of those legal details. You can see a fairly aggressive schedule there. They intend to complete their task of updating the model. They're going to migrate all the information to a much more modern software approach, and then produce a water availability analysis as well as a new downstream release program by October 30th of this year. They'll be meeting with I think the team staff April 1st is the plan, and then be at the TAC April 2nd, if I have those dates right, to update the TAC on their progress. So we look forward to volumes of material and a lot of work for all of us involved between now and midsummer. Their standard tactical approach is to heavily engage their client. I already have a phone message that I just noticed as I was leaving the office to come down here for information, detail, background. That's the mode of operation of this company, so we're excited to have them with us. The other part of the team, which is H.T. Harvey, that we've had on contract and in the waiting mode, they did some of the work that they could do, and then we put them on hold pending the hydrogeologic. Their contract actually expired. We've produced a renewed contract, added a bit of scope for coordination time with E-Corp. That's all within the original contract contingency amounts. And then we've negotiated them back down to their original rates from, you know, standard proposal 3 years later. They want to up the rates, and we suggested that that might not be appropriate, and they agreed. So we expect that contract to be back to the board April or May as time from its staff and legal counsel to do the paperwork on it. They need to be ready to go by mid-May, June to fully participate, and I think we'll make those time frames pretty well.
Great. Questions from the committee?
Yes, please. Just one. And when was the notice to proceed issued?
I believe it's February 19th.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I just had a comment since I haven't been on the Zone 3 committee for some time. Looks like it's a very ambitious project here to get the hydrogeologic information or hydrologic information done. So I'm glad to see that we've got somebody that's going to really push it through. And then the HT Harvey folks will come along behind that using this data to help finish the habitat conservation plan. That's the whole bigger picture.
Yeah, the focus now is get the model, peer-reviewed, updated, into the new software. It's not all that new, but much newer than what the previous model was using. And then work with HT Harvey to prepare the proposed downstream release program. We have one from the previous team, which I'm describing as best case for fish, but doesn't work for municipal and ag together along with the fish. So it's a good alternative to say. Now we need the one that we think we can actually live with. And we purposely limited their scope to those tasks so that we can bring this to a point in October and November, get with the TAC, take it apart piece by piece, make sure we're going in the right direction, and then deliberately take the next steps of preparing the additional information that goes into an HCP, mitigation plans, figuring costs and those things. I think the other approach all the way back in 99-2000 was to move everything forward, and when one thing went off track a little bit, the other stuff kind of followed it, and it just became volumes of wonderful, accurate information that didn't quite relate to the goal. So it's a good foundation, but it never really built a house. So we're going to
put the house back together, basically.
One story at a time here.
How about keeping NOAA informed along the way to make sure that they'll be comfortable with the final product? Is there a process you're going to use for that?
What we're going to do is get eCorp to do the first couple of model runs so we know where we're at. I don't know if we're going to tell NOAA, you know, give them an update and say we're going to make slight changes to the last proposal you saw, or if we take a deep breath and tell them it's radically different at this point. we want to have our heads wrapped around what it is we're dealing with.
Well, I guess just the general strategy, it's up to staff to figure out what's the best strategy there. I think
right.
We can give our opinion, but it just seems like at some point when the time is ripe,
right,
you don't want to get them on board too soon, or you... Well, it's too soon. It's all it's not done yet. But when you get closer, it seems like I'm just trying to think of a strategy that will help make sure we can get through this arduous process and serve our residents. So,
yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot of pieces to that. Our typical strategy in public works is to first make sure that we believe the project we're proposing is feasible, works for us, is permittable, you know, works for all of the stakeholders. And then without fully developing it, then bring in the regulatory folks and start showing them why it's a good project and a good deal. Now, that's kind of the staff level strategy. We have talked in the TAC that at the point where the initial draft reviews are done and a formal application is made, then looking at how the federal government is operating right now, National Marine Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Service, we'll be needing to engage all of the Zone 3 agencies in a united front to urge those agencies to move our priority up the ladder. So the advantage there is it's not just a letter from San Luis County Flood Control District saying, could you please look at this? It's a good project. We'll have three cities and a CSD and two CSDs. Not only writing those letters, but talking to our congresspeople, because that, unfortunately, is the way things get done.
Okay, great. Any other questions, comments?
Okay. Well, you know, I, for one, am glad to see eCorp moving forward rapidly. That's a welcome change to what we've had in the past.
Yes.
Okay, and no other questions. Budget update, FY14-15, quarter two.
Next.
For the record, my name is Jennifer Colvard with the County Public Works Department. Attached in your packets is a copy of the 14-15 second quarter report. In total, Zone 3 expenses were approximately 15% under budget at second quarter. In your handouts, there's three graphs reflecting the second quarter budget to actual expenditures in three categories. The first category represents routine operations and maintenance. Okay, I hope they're in there.
Yeah, they're there.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're here.
As of the second quarter, O&M is slightly over budget by about 5% or $79,000. This is reasonable midway through the year, and we do anticipate that that will be at budget by year end. The second graph represents non-routine O&M, which is under budgeted levels by $182,000 or 79%. And this is primarily due to HCP and pigging efforts. And as Mark said earlier, we entered into the contract with E-Corp. We anticipate that most of that budget will be spent for HCP efforts by year end. Pigging will continue for the next few years. And the third graph represents our capital outlay. Capital outlay is under budget by 39% or $274,000 as a result of four projects. The perimeter fencing project, the SCADA system, the sixth rack filtration module, and the computer replacement project. But Jeff Lee's here, and he will give you updates on each of the projects. The only other item I have is we did finalize the 13-14 billings, and we credited in total about $191,000, which was netted with the January invoices for 14-15. That concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
No.
Seeing none, let me go out to any members of the public want to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back. Do we need a motion to approve and file this? Is that traditionally done? Okay, this is only receive and file. Let's then go on to the next item, capital projects
Thank
update.
You.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Lee with County Public Works. So, and on page 19 of your agenda, of your package this evening, is the capital projects update. I'll kind of piggyback on what Jennifer just presented to you. We do have four projects currently underway. You'll notice that two of which are actually complete and are in the wrap-up stage of their billing and then on into implementation. The two that are complete are the perimeter security fence. That is the first phase of a two-phase project. The second phase is programmed several years from now when we finish several other projects in your five-year capital program. The other project that is complete is the equipment replacement program or the computer upgrades at the plant. And that that testing went off smoothly and very little downtime, and the operators are very pleased with the results of that. So the other two projects that are continuing to move forward is the sixth rack addition. The rack is currently being fabricated by the Paul Corporation with delivery in late April or mid-May. We do have some connection plans and foundation plans being prepared by the Wallace Group. And we do anticipate bidding through county purchasing for that through the informal bid process. Excuse me. The Turnout SCADA project is also underway. The panel design is complete, and that actually should be proverbially on the street for bidding as early as next week. It's into county purchasing for them to get it out to the manufacturers. Canon is under contract to install the panels at each of the turnouts after they are fabricated. And depending upon the lead time of the fabrication of the panels, we do anticipate that this project could be completed by the and operational by the end of the fiscal year. So with that, I'm available for any questions.
Any questions?
No. Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Karen.
And I'm not sure, that, actually, Jeff, that you're the one who would answer this question. Well, the first one, I think you are. In the budget, there is a discussion regarding the billable non-routine O&M expenditures, and it says that Rodriguez Bridge costs were moved from routine to non-routine. I don't know that I'm familiar with the Rodriguez Bridge project. Can you speak to that a bit?
I can speak to that a little bit, and actually Mark can probably in his prior hat, can also provide an update on that as well. Several years ago, a project to protect the water line coming down from the dam was implemented, and a series of fish ladders or fish steps were installed in the vicinity of the Rodriguez Bridge. That was completed approximately 3 years ago. However, as a result of environmental permits, we do have a 10-year monitoring program to make sure that the plantings and so forth are surviving and sustaining. And so that's
that the... I'm sorry, that the what?
The plantings. Sorry, the landscaping.
Oh, okay,
so
thank you.
So landscaping are
so
continuing
to... Rodriguez Bridge is maybe...
Oh,
I have no idea. Casual.
Actually, and that is as what's about a mile and a half or a thousand, slightly downstream of the dam itself
okay.
as you go up Lopez Drive.
I think the road sometimes shows up on maps as Trout Farm Road.
Okay.
It turns right off of Lopez Drive. It's the first bridge downstream from the dam. The road provides access to the base of the dam. There used to be a trout farm at the base of the dam.
Right, sure.
So our water line, our main raw water line from the dam down to the terminal reservoir at the plant, crosses under the creek just upstream of Rodriguez Bridge. So it might have been more appropriate to name the project the Waterline Crossing at Rodriguez Bridge.
That's what I was going to get at.
Probably because we didn't spend any Zone 3 money on the bridge.
Thank you. I was wondering because of the description. Okay.
So what happened there was that as the creek flows and the dam collects the sediment, the creek erodes the sediment out of the creek bed and cuts down. So when that pipe was installed, it was under the creek with concrete poured on top and... 2 years ago, it was sticking up about 2.5 feet out of the creek. So we had the resource agencies concerned that the fish could not get past it, and we were concerned that a big storm, if the dam was to spill over the spillway, might damage our pipeline. So after looking at a lot of alternatives, as you can imagine, the decision was made to put what's called rock weirs, boulders, across the creek, to make step pools all from below the bridge up through underneath the bridge. And the top step pool, the top of that is above the water line by about a foot, so the sediment has filled in behind it, covered the water line up, and the rock weirs are all engineered to flow water through specific gaps at rates that fish can leap up into and make it all the way past.
We shall see.
Well.
But in doing that,
I'm
very happy fish. Yeah, we want to see it spill and see if all the rocks stay where they're at. As you can imagine, when you do that to a creek, I think the technical term is you blitz the creek. There's about 100 yards of stream that was put into a pipe, bypassed around, the stream bed ripped out, all the vegetation on the side, huge boulders dug in. So then you have to put all, once the boulders are in, you put the gravel back, then you put all the plants back. And then you do these monitoring reports to the resource agencies to show that the stream is recovering, that the boulders aren't moving, the plants are growing, the fish are happy. And that's become this routine O&M now? Is that where we put
it? Non-routine.
That? Non-routine.
It was routine, but now it's non-routine.
Just a term there, I think.
Okay. Well, at least I know what that project is. And may I have one last question?
Absolutely, sure.
Thank you. And that's regarding the plans that are being designed by Wallace Group. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering about Mr. Wallace is the CSA 12 rep. Is there not a conflict there with him doing those plans? Anyway, the perception is it'd be kind of odd to me, but and I've had a couple of comments from folks in my town. So I just thought I'd bring that up and see where it goes.
In conflicts, there's two different issues. One are conflicts, and the second is prohibited transactions, where if somebody's on a governing board, then, you know, their entity cannot do work with that particular agency. Versus conflicts, it just simply requires a board member to step down and not participate in that decision. So I don't know what it was or how that decision was particularly made to hire the Wallace Group, but if it came through Zone 3, I would have expected him to step down from the committee and not participate in that discussion. But he's not an elected official of the county, so I don't see it being a prohibited transaction.
Okay. And I understand that. I was hoping that he'd be here so I could have talked, so I could have spoke with him before the meeting. But so maybe we can we talk about this with Mr. Wallace here so he can talk you know, how he feels that it's not a conflict, or, well, you say it's not a prohibitive
That's action. My understanding is that it wouldn't be a prohibited transaction, but if he has a conflict, then my understanding is he would not be able to participate in any discussions. I think maybe the follow-up would be an explanation from the county on how the hiring decision was made.
Yeah, that's what I would recommend. I think having a future discussion on this would have to be agendized, I think. And it's more of a question, I think, perhaps for county council, maybe if staff could, Mark or John, or wonder if somebody could check to see if there is any, that when this process occurred, I assume you went out to bid. The question was, you know, was our Zone 3 Advisory Committee involved in that decision on who was chosen or to spend the money or anything like that? I guess the question is, it's one of a, you know, more of a county contracting issue, and I guess I'd rather defer to you, and perhaps you can report back under,
yeah, I think that,
under
that
your
just...
comment section or something where you...
I think what we can do too, we'll double check on this particular contract on how that was bid and selected and whatnot, and then ask council to produce a memo for the entire committee describing where we need to be careful as members with different forms of conflict and prohibited actions, since there's always such a broad representation on the committee, and to have that in the file so folks have a reference to work from.
And this committee is advisory. There's very few things we take final action on. It's recommendations to the county.
Yep.
By the same token, if somehow a committee member were involved in anything having to do with the financial kinds of things, that should be something to be under consideration.
I just think we could just clarify it, and that would be swell.
Sure. Will that take care of it then?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually.
Any
Thank
other
you.
Comments?
You know, I have a question.
Sure.
Maybe it's for Jeff Lee, but... but maybe somebody else might be able to answer it. I'm looking at, and it may seem off track here, Jeff, but I'm looking at the changes in reserves in the budget. And I see that in 14-15, we had a decrease in reserves on the contractor-funded side attributed to capital. And I'm thinking it went to these capital projects. Am I wrong in that?
Or we are going to cover the budget in a couple.
Yeah, if that's something that Jennifer can answer, we can do that later.
Okay, I can answer.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions of the committee? I'm just glad to see a lot of these things are moving along. I remember that bridge issue way back when. I'm glad to see it's done. And looks like you're making a good progress. The rack addition will provide more flow through then?
Actually, it won't provide more flow. Actually, it'll provide more operational efficiency. We do have five racks out at the plant operating now, and during the operation of that, typically one of the racks is brought offline for back flushing and operational. This will provide an opportunity to provide more consistent operations of the plant itself, but in accordance with the permit, it won't allow for additional flow through the plant.
Okay, so it's more of a okay.
Can I? Good question.
Sure.
If I could follow. So, in terms of our capacity limitations, then is it the DAF unit or the pipelines that then are the constraint on capacity?
I don't personally know that that answer. I don't know. That might be something we can.
I think it depends on what the circumstance is. As the reservoir lowers, we're going to find out that the 20-inch pipeline between the dam and the treatment plant is going to be our constraint, and not the DAF. But
because the head losses?
Right.
Yeah, I guess that raises a larger question. As the dam lowers, I think earlier on I heard a report saying that the water clarity was good down to the bottom of the lake. But I suppose as we get closer to the bottom, as we could get more problems, and I assume you're anticipating that.
Yeah, that's always a potential.
Pardon?
That's always a potential for water quality concerns that also relates to the weather and sometimes wind, sustained wind over the lakes.
Okay.
I was just going to comment that the I think the plant's rated or permitted a maximum of 6 million gallons a day. During the summer, through the efforts of our operators and the constant contact with the state Division of Drinking Water and their approval,
we ran the plant as high consistently at 6.7 million gallons a day. Although I have a sense that Craig was hanging on for dear life to make it do that. But when all things come together, you know, that's possible for short periods.
Okay. There being no other questions, go out to the public. Any public on comments or questions on this one? Seeing none. This is information only. Next item is item 7, action items. Is that a duplicate of item 8?
No. One is has no Board of Supervisors subsequent action, and one is does have subsequent.
Okay.
Today's action items both are going to go to the board afterwards.
Okay, let's move on to item 7.
Okay, so I'm also going to be going over the 15-16 budget.
Okay.
And we are asking for your endorsement tonight. So my my little presentation here is going to be broken into three sections. Maybe. So first, we're going to give you a refresher of the annual budget process, then an overview of the 15-16 budget, and then we'll answer any questions you have at that point. Go ahead. Okay, so as you're aware, in January, each year we bring the budgets to your committee and distribute them and go over a brief overview. Then in February, we meet with the technical and finance committees and vet out any questions that they have. And then we come back in March and ask for your committee's endorsement. And then the budget goes to our Board of Supervisors for review and approval in June. Let's see if that works now. Yeah, this is it. So basically, this is reiterating what's in the budget books that we handed out. But overall, expenditures are going up approximately 2.8%. O&M expenditures went up 6.3% due to three main reasons. And that's labor, which is about 61% of our operating budget. Our assumptions that we built into our budgets this year were a 2.5% COLA increase for both 14-15 and 15-16. So that was about $142,000 of that increase. And then water quality lab costs went up about $34,000. And then, in addition, we are replacing 4 meters in total, 2 for Arroyo Grande and 2 for Pismo Beach meter stations. And those were about $12,000 and $18,000. So that's the main reason for that increase this year. Debt service was slightly down, but this is pretty constant and will stay pretty constant until 2030 or unless we refinance those bonds. Capital outlay, it says it's down 7.7%. That's strictly based on the big spreadsheet that we look at, that you fold out, and it's the 11 by 17. Really what we've kept with is that $550,000 cap. Again, we just have some of the things that are categorized up in the non-routine, one of them being pigging. And then there's the $25,000 that used to be down in capital outlay last year that we moved up to non-routine for equipment replacement. The audit, which is basically identifying all of the equipment at the water treatment plant that would potentially be put on a replacement cycle. And there were a few items that we moved around, and you brought up the Rodriguez Bridge. I think last year we didn't really know what that was going to cost, and so we estimated about $10,000 and put it in routine O&M. And then this year we had a better idea of what they were doing, and we felt it was more appropriate to be non-routine because it does have an end date. It's not something that would go on in perpetuity. So, capital outlay. where am I? 2015-16 capital projects, again, we kept within the 550 cap, and we are reimbursing this $176,000 that was funded out of Zone 3 reserves last year for the filtration rack. So I believe if you look in last year's budget, you see that the reserves paid $176,000. And in this year's budget, we're refunding that into our reserves as part of the 550. And that kind of leads into the other question you had on the reserves. $140,000 of that was taken out of the contractor reserves. That's the amount that we had built into the reserves at the time. And then the remaining $36,000 was out of Zone 3 reserves. So when we're billing for this back, it's going back into the contractor reserves, if that makes sense. So you're basically getting it back, and it's going to be allocated specifically to each of your agencies. And this is just a review of our labor hours since 04-05. And you see in 07-08 is when the water treatment plant went live, and it's gone down steadily, and then it's kind of leveled out at about 22,000 man hours a year. And this is just information. I think that's it. So now we're just asking that your committee endorses our budget.
Okay, questions. I think there were some questions here for the about the budget. Any questions?
Questions?
Yeah, I got a question. So, Jennifer, in terms of the reserves,
okay,
projecting to June 30th of 15, we're projecting $3 million. That's page 8. About $3 million in budget or
yes,
in the reserves.
Yes.
And I'm curious about the, is there a set number that we're using for a goal for those reserves? And if so, what is it?
Well, we do have a policy, and it's, I think, on the earlier in the book. Let's see. It's letter III.
Okay.
That basically we try to keep to our working capital, 50% of our working capital. So we did move some of the reserves that were in designated reserves into our operating reserves as part of this budget to keep at that level. But that's kind of that's our policy. We're not collecting more reserves. This comes from I'm not sure the full story on that, but I think, Pavo, you probably are more familiar with that $3 million that it had to do with property tax money.
Correct. So when the contracts were renegotiated in around the year 2000, they needed to be renegotiated for the seismic remediation project and also address what was then known that the water treatment plant would be upgraded. And the change with respect to property taxes is that the property taxes that are now being collected on an annual basis help to fund the budget. And I think it helps to fund debt service. I can't remember, but anyways, current year property taxes help to fund the budget. Prior to the contract renegotiations, those property taxes were used to help build up reserves. And so the change that happened is that we would no longer have a buildup of reserves through the property tax allocation. Mm-hmm. And that is then the amount that existed then in around 2000, which was higher than right now, is what's called the district funded reserves, because they really came out of the flood control district's tax allocation. They didn't come out of any of our contractor funds. And the unique thing about property tax revenues is that the Board of Supervisors really has great discretion on those property tax revenues. So the renegotiation, they made the financial commitment to use them every year and dedicate them to the budget, but the amount that was in the bank as around 2000 is what we see as district-funded reserves. And as Jennifer explained, in some years the county recommends to help use them to fund some unique or one-time costs. And part of that is just to keep our bills from fluctuating too greatly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there is discretion there. And at the city manager's meeting, Jennifer had, you know, the timeline. So the CSD managers and the city managers got together. Mark was there, and I think Will Clemens was there, and Wade Horton, the director, was there. And we had a little bit of follow-up discussion on those reserves and the groundwater monitoring that and modeling that we have to embark on pretty soon. And what I would like to do is to sort of take the consideration of this budget in two steps. One is, you know, I know my board has endorsed the budget as written, and I'm certainly going to follow my board's direction. And then separately, after, if the committee endorses the budget, to talk about those funded reserves a little bit and what we really think we're going to be doing in the near future on groundwater modeling and monitoring, and then consider maybe a supplemental recommendation that's separate from what Jennifer is presenting.
And so when that money's spent, it's not being replenished. If we do, for example, the $176,000 and it was replenished, if the decision's made to use that for something, there's no mechanism right now to replenish that. We do have the contractor-funded reserves, and that's the $140,000 that we are putting back in, and as well as one of the CIP line items was a $50,000 equipment replacement reserve. That's to start somewhat of a slush fund for some of this equipment that hasn't been identified yet. That would fund some of that unanticipated operating equipment. But we don't have, right now, we don't have a mechanism to collect that. So there's been a lot of talks about trying to come up with a way to start collecting a reserve as the district reserves aren't, you know, once they're spent, they're gone. So
basically we need some kind of reserves, and right now a good portion of those reserves are derived from the earlier property tax.
Correct.
Yeah, and part
which
of the
not really what we've paid for. It's under underlying property taxes, yeah. I suppose, in this area. But
part of the thinking, you know, in 2000, you know, after 2000, as the seismic project and the treatment plant project were getting developed, is that we all knew that there was going to be some good bump up, significant increases in all of our contractor costs, and so in the initial years, the thought was, let's not have any significant increase in contractor-funded reserves because we're going to have to modify our rates and do whatever we need to do to pay for the higher cost of Lopez Water. And because the district has significant funded reserves, we knew that if something came up, you know, emergency or something unforeseen, we had money that we could rely on. But as time goes by and as the district-funded reserves are going down, the expectation is we're going to have to start funding our equipment replacement. And so it started a little bit, and I think what we're really going to be seeing over the next five-year cycle is more planning on those district and equipment-funded reserves, and we sort of have to have that expectation that we're going to be paying a little bit more. You know, basically it's for the depreciation
of I understand.
The equipment.
Any other questions?
Well, you know, I don't see any funds in contractor funded at present, right?
That's, well, we are moving.
I'm looking at page 8.
Well, the capital portion, $190,000.
Contractor funded. If you look on page 8, you see the $190,000.
Yeah.
Page,
you have a different page 8 than I do?
Yeah,
are they sending you different reports?
Yeah.
Oh, you do.
I don't have $190,000 here.
You don't.
This is the one that Jennifer gave me.
That's the 14-15.
Oh,
That's the one we took it out last year for 14-15.
Okay. No wonder I'm having a problem.
Here, we can borrow
it. Same
last year.
Don't make me look bad. No, okay.
Kind of feels like Groundhog Day, huh?
That'll help. Okay,
there you go. You can take mine and ignore any
okay.
I have in it.
Well, Bob gave me one. I don't need to take yours, Jennifer. Okay. You'll need it back. That one.
I had two.
He had two.
Did that clarify? Did you still have some questions?
That clarifies it.
So that 190.
I got this last 2 months ago. Because these are my notes from the meeting of 2 months ago. We're going to take this on March 20th for endorsement at today, right? That's what this says on the face of it. I wrote it in the meeting, so it might have gotten mixed in with some.
Oh. I also sent out electronic copies to everybody, too.
Okay.
But that 190 is the 140 being replenished back to the contractor reserves plus the additional 50 in the 15-16 budget for equipment reserves. So that's where it would sit. And any reserves that we would use, we would take that to your board for recommendation.
Okay.
Just as a any side note.
Other questions?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Regarding the graph that you had for the employee costs or labor hours, is that something that we can get a copy of? It's not in here, right?
No, that's just informational.
Send you a copy of that. That'd be swell. I'd appreciate that. I had a question, or our council had a question raised by one of our residents regarding the 61% cost of the budget for labor. And afterwards I was asked, how many employees does that entail? And I hadn't a clue. Would that graph, I don't have my glasses on now, but would that graph give me that information, or can you give me that information?
Well, full-time is budgeted at 1,760 hours a person. So if you divided that by 22,000 hours.
22,000 hours a year.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm missing a zero there. So 1,760 man hours per, or hours.
You're putting the CPA on the spot.
It's not me. We have some really engaged residents.
12 and a half.
You should show up to these meetings.
That's what I said. Okay, 12 and a half full-time FTEs? Okay, thank
12
you.
And a half FTE.
And
very good. Thank you.
So maybe with 12 and a half, the idea is, what does that staffing level do? Because they don't just operate the treatment plant. They also operate the reservoir, the distribution system. I assume that those hours also include the water quality lab individuals. Is
yes.
that total FTE
That's
for the operations?
Hours. Yes.
It includes Jennifer's time.
And I would imagine also like the purchasing department, if there are any RFPs or like that are done.
That wouldn't include their hours. They charge us. The way that our accounting system works is it just comes through as a cost. It wouldn't be hours on our budget.
And so
we just see that as a
so
cost.
So these are direct labor charges.
These are direct labor charges.
By public works staff.
Yeah.
Okay, and so where would those other charges show up in our budget? Anywhere in the Zone 3 budget?
Well, they're included in those O&M costs.
Okay.
Yeah, Jennifer, I think you probably have a line item for countywide overhead.
Yes, but that's for unallocated charges from the auditor's office after the fact. I think we actually pay purchasing annually.
For purchasing?
For purchasing services. Thought we did.
Separate from countywide overhead?
Yeah.
There it is. We get billed, Mark Hutchinson, for instance, on the Habitat Conservation Plan, put out an RFP
mm-hmm.
for E-Corp.
Right.
That goes through the county purchasing department, and they use the project charge code, so that shows up as a few hours, not many, actually, because the project team, which is a direct labor cost showing up, does the majority of the work, but posting it on the website, properly handling all the proposals and stuff like that, you're going to see I want to say 24 to 40 hours of a purchasing agent that shows up as a cost to the project itself.
Cost of the project. Okay. So that's how that would be rolled in, then, as a cost of the project. Okay.
If
very
it's
good.
Project related, they also provide services just through our routine operations, too. But I would imagine the costs for projects are much larger.
Okay. I think that's sufficient. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Go out to the public. Any public comment? Seeing none, let's bring it back to the committee for, and I'll entertain a motion to endorse the proposed FY15-16 budget.
Well, I'll make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. I think we probably need a roll call on this. A roll call, please.
Member Bright?
Yes.
Member Barnidge?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Member Ogren?
Yes.
Member Gehring?
Yes.
And Chairperson Waage?
Yes.
And so my comments earlier, I wanted to entertain a little bit of discussion with the committee on a point that was brought up when the city managers and the CSD managers got together to review this, because the finance committee members met and then the city managers met. And the general nature of where the discussion went was on the idea of what are we going to do to improve our groundwater monitoring and our groundwater modeling efforts. And in last fall, the Board of Supervisors endorsed the overall concept of some participatory funding with not just the Zone 3 or the NCMA agencies, but also with the MESA in order to help move the groundwater modeling and monitoring efforts go on. Well, Lopez is obviously a surface water supply, not a groundwater supply. But the question evolves into is on a conjunctive use basis, you know, what we might draw out of the reservoir, especially in a drought situation, has a relationship to how we might pursue pumping and the groundwater pumping effort, that you can't really, you know, separate them together. We have to develop you know, a better understanding of what we're going to be doing in the groundwater modeling efforts and future pumping. And as the drought is persisting, that priority is increasing. So the question became then is in following up on the fall discussion with the Board of Supervisors in participatory funding, might the Zone 3 and specifically the district-funded reserves also help to some degree in helping with those particular efforts? And it would be premature right now to make a specific recommendation. In fact, meetings are coming up with, you know, all the municipal agencies really in the five cities area and on the Mesa of how are we going to proceed. And the idea is that I think we want to have that door open as the possibility of using some of the district-funded reserves to help with some of the costs that we're all going to be incurring. Now, the discussion that we had earlier also has to recognize that if we make that request and if the Board of Supervisors supports that request, then the district-funded reserves are going to go down. And so if something unexpected or unforeseen comes about, then as contracting agencies, you know, we might face a greater need for contractor-funded reserves. But the idea that the unforeseen or the emergency thing that we have in front of us right now is the drought, and we need to move forward in the groundwater monitoring and modeling efforts. Clearly, that's the most significant thing that faces us and all of California, really. So the idea is that I think it would be beneficial for us to simply have some sort of a motion to have that door open as part of the dialogue, that when we move forward with the county in trying to figure out how we're going to model these efforts or deal with the groundwater basin efforts, that we want some recognition that we might come back and request some of those district-funded reserves to help cover those
right.
costs.
I'm just looking at the process here, that under the Brown Act, we have to notice everything we're going to do. I'm not sure that we're within the Brown Act at this point. I'm thinking, can this wait till the next meeting?
I'm fine with it.
Put it on the agenda
so
we can have the staff perhaps check back. Maybe we can have a consensus that we want to be able to discuss the use of the reserves.
Certainly, I think we're good to talk about it because as far as the agenda goes, it was
absolutely no. We talked about. I'm afraid of taking any formal action at this point.
Right.
I'd feel better if we can wait until the next meeting, and make an agenda item, and then make a recommendation. I think it would be helpful, at least for me, to get some more input from staff on where this is going to. As you mentioned, it was
That's right.
I talked to our city manager. He didn't mention that particular item.
Yeah. So a number of the upcoming meetings are going to. Some different scenarios on how to fund the groundwater monitoring and modeling efforts are going to be discussed. So I think I prefaced my comments with it would be premature right now to have any specific recommendations on the table. But I do think it's something that we do need to follow up on because of the significance of the drought and the dire need to move forward on, you know, evaluating the groundwater basin.
Right. Well, we have a consensus of the committee to ask staff to bring something back. Is that something you could bring back the next meeting? So at least we can discuss it, and whether it's ripe for a decision at that point, I don't know. But it looks like you're having internal discussion, certainly with the other groups, on where we, how we should fund some of these groundwater.
I think there's an invitation out on the street.
Pardon?
Week of April 10th. I want to say we're trying to.
Yeah.
Might be a little later than that, but that may work. NCMA and MMA county reps all getting together to talk groundwater in the South County and the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, the need for a model, also additional monitoring, and then, of course, funding that whole thing. So hopefully we can bring a report on the status of that back in your May meeting. Maybe good timing to vet that out.
Okay.
Or at least give you an update on what the progress or status of those discussions are.
Yeah, let's have an agenda item so we can discuss it and then decide whether we want to move forward with a possible recommendation by motion or just continue to watch and monitor. Okay, any further public comment since we deviated a bit? Public comment on this item?
Certainly, Jeff English, Public Works Director, City of Arroyo Grande. That NCMA meeting with NNMA is on April 17th. It's a Friday afternoon. I think it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So
thank you. And where will that be?
It's going to be held in in Arroyo Grande in the second floor meeting room.
Thank you.
What's the date of that again, Jeff?
April 17th. It's Friday afternoon.
And who else, who else is attending that meeting again?
I know it was the NCMA reps and then individuals from each of the agencies in the Pomo.
Okay.
I believe there was county representation as well.
So does that sound like a lot of the engineering technical types getting together?
It's a technical group meeting.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. All right, let's move on to item 8B, declaration of surplus water.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director, I need to preface my presentation by saying when I started to write this staff report, I thought this is going to be the easiest one I've done in a long time. And then as I started writing and trying to explain the difference or the relationship between surplus water and the low reservoir response plan, not so easy. So your staff report tries to hit the high points so as not to confuse anyone. I handed out a copy of the PowerPoint with lots of room to make notes. And an 11x17 version of this chart, which has all the answers. You should have a big version of this somewhere on your desk. And there's a small one, of course, in the agenda packet. And extras here for anybody from the public who wants to follow along. And I'm going to try this out on you. And of course, there's a map of Zone 3 for the audience, although I hope our audience has that map memorized. A little bit of background here, just for your information and in your discussions as we move along. This is the what's called the Zone 3 Safe Yield Distribution. So as a reminder, the amount of water that the reservoir can produce on an average annual basis over an extended period of time is calculated at 8,730 acre feet, which is an important number to keep in mind. Of that, the contracts among our water contractors, subcontractors, total 4,530, which leaves a balance of 4,200. There is no downstream contracts. That number is simply the difference between the contracted water and the safe yield. So there's a difference there in the status of those water. It's a little bit out of order here. I do want to talk first about surplus water. This is going to be disjointed. I'm going to take you to a point in that spreadsheet and then shift gears completely and then come back to it again. So hopefully you can track along, because we are not under the surplus water rules that are currently in the contract. You'll recall that in the fall and winter of last year, all of the Zone 3 subcontractors, including CSA 12 and Havilah Beach CSD, the county representing CS 12, and the Flood Control District, all adopted resolutions agreeing to follow the release program that's in the low reservoir response plan. However, the contracts are still in effect. So the way it will work is that the district needs to, per the contract, declare surplus water, and we hope to do that on April 14th, and then everybody pulls out their resolution and says, all right, in response to that, my agency is going to take this action, and then the district will say, and in response to that, we will take this emergency action to create, in essence, and what we'll talk about, a full carryover account for each agency. And carryover I've used in this presentation because it's specifically a term that's not in any of our contracts. That is a term that relates to the board's emergency drought declaration and the actions that they've taken in concert with Zone 3 to manage South County water. And for anyone who's watching, and as a reminder, we are working very closely, all of the agencies, to manage Lopez Lake as part of a water portfolio in the South County. It's no longer being managed as a separate source or entity. It's being managed in consideration of the groundwater status and also the delivery amounts available from the State Water Project, which are the three components of water supply currently in the South County. I'm going to get to the recommendations in the middle, because it's important to bring you up to date on what's happening at the TAC in our near-term future, what our storage projections are, and the discussions at the TAC regarding adaptive management, which is also a component of the low reservoir response plan. This is a background table, also in your handouts, that describes the entitlement water by contract percentage. And that relates to how surplus water under normal conditions is offered and usually accepted by the agencies. And then just to show you, I'm sure the folks who wrote this understood exactly what they meant. And I have to sit down and read the entire contract, talk to the lawyers, and then look at the spreadsheet to make sure I understand what they meant. But I want to relate this back to the concept of safe yield. The idea and the operating scenario that the reservoir has operated under since its inception was that, considering safe yield 8730, now it may not take in 8730 in any given year, but in some years it takes in more, some years less, but over the long term, that's proven to be a good number. And so for water management purposes, considering that we're using the water for essentially a stable demand on the other end, we can smooth out the supply by trying to get as close to 8730 out of the reservoir as we can or need year over year over year. So match the use to the safe yield. The way we do that is at the end of the year, we calculate how much of the entitlement water of the 4530 was not used. Any of that goes in the bank. And any downstream releases below 4,200, so the difference between what we release and 4,200, that amount of unreleased water goes in the bank. And then per the contracts, we divide that bank by those percentages that we saw in the previous chart. So Rio Grande paying 50.55% of the costs gets 50.55% of that available water. Now, the contracts use the term surplus water, and we've been questioned in the press about declaring a surplus. And so I'm careful to define that surplus does not mean there's extra water. What it means is there's water available. So that's about three definitions down in the Webster's. And it's a standard water management term. You see that in a lot of water contracts, and that's the way it's used, not as somehow there's just this abundance of extra water out there. It means that in a water management scenario such as we have, there is water available. So then we come to this massive thing, which is not going to show up. That's why I gave you the handout there. I'm going to do some highlighting here. Over on the left, the gray columns, A, B, C, and D, that comes from last August when the last surplus water declaration was made, where the board effectively calculated the amount of unreleased safe yield over the past 5 years, added it to surplus, and divvied up the accounts to the agencies by their entitlement percentage. So where we started retroactively to April 1st, 2014, by agency, you can see the total available water in two columns, entitlement, that's the contracts, and then what was termed a surplus. So across the top line, using Rio Grande as an example, went into the year understanding there was 3,466 acre-feet of water available for that entity's use. The next set of boxes, the blue and the yellow. The blue is adds up to actual used water by entity. You got multiple columns because we're not at the end of March yet. We're pushing this forward. We want to have, again, the board confirm the surplus and LRRP water amounts as soon as possible so that agencies can do water planning for next year. So we're estimating the March deliveries. That's where we took last year's deliveries, this year's requests, the rate that agencies have been using water, mushed them together and divided and put them into the column. We passed this out to the TAC for them to tell us if there's any gross errors. And you'll see in the recommendations there's an opportunity for the public works directors to make the final accounting when we get to March 31st. But we think these numbers are pretty close. So sticking with Rio Grande as an example, column H, the blue column farthest to the right, we think they're going to use about 2,579 acre-feet of water out of Lopez. And I didn't have, and Jeff can tell us how that averages out to years past. But again, they, like the other agencies, are managing this on a portfolio basis. And there's a major effort now to very carefully manage groundwater pumping and, if necessary, lean more on the reservoir. It is low, but it's still at 40%. So we don't want to be over-pumping the groundwater with a reservoir that's 40% full. Need to bring that back into balance. So you notice then for Rio Grande, surplus generated, which is defined as unused entitlement. Well, if the entitlement was 2290 and we used 2579, well, there's no unused entitlement. We used all the entitlement and some of the surplus. And then that continues on down for the agencies. And you'll see that CSA 12 essentially left 115 acre-feet of water in the reservoir. Everyone else used their entitlement and then moved into some of that surplus. The next line down is the downstream release. We're projecting 3,084 acre-feet of downstream release. So there's 1,116 acre-feet of unreleased downstream. So total projected surplus, 1,231. We go back to the percentage. We take the 1,231 and divide it by entitlement amounts. Remember, Rio Grande is 50.55%, so they're entitled to 622 acre-feet of surplus and on down the line. Then we stop. That's what we would recommend that our Board of Supervisors offer 1,231 acre-feet to the agencies, and then the agencies would respond in writing. And under the contract, they could each say, well, we want that amount of water. But that is not the agreement that we made in the low reservoir release plan. And so I need to talk about that a little bit. So we have, remember the low reservoir response plan, excuse me. The idea is to manage the reservoir and municipal diversions to preserve water for a minimum of 3 to 4 years. From when we started this, it went into effect just about December 1st. We hit 20,000. And as a reminder, this is part of a larger plan called the Interim Downstream Release Schedule, another snazzy acronym you can pronounce called IDRIS. And that's basically the plan we adopted to avoid getting a ticket from the federal resource agencies while we operate the dam and the lake as best we can for the agencies. So this is from the low reservoir release or response plan. We know that it has reductions in entitlement water deliveries at trigger points, and we'll see those. It has reductions in downstream releases. But when we talk about the response plan in relation to surplus water, no new allocations of surplus water from unreleased downstream. So that 1,116, it says we're not going to allocate that to municipal use. We'll leave the 1,116 essentially in the reservoir for the LRRP use, and we'll see that it won't necessarily stay there, but we're going to allocate it differently. And then this extension of time that agencies can take delivery of unused water. What that means is each agency is now operating on their own individual water accounts. So go all the way back to the total available in column D. Rio Grande started out with 3,466 acre feet. That becomes their water to manage through the drought as long as we're under the LRRP. And so on. These are the municipal diversion reductions by way of background. We're some 19,000 acre feet in storage between 20 and 15, so above 15, so the municipal diversions right now are zero. But again, the downstream, unreleased downstream, doesn't accrue to surplus. That's the water management, the main one in place. Notice the next step is a 10% reduction. And then for the downstream, this is not a straight line across the board. 3,800 traditionally is the amount of water that we've, on average, released downstream to keep agriculture functioning, especially in the upper valley. Interesting that this year, because of the way the rains fell and the way the farmers planted, we are some 750 acre feet underneath that. This is a maximum, but we kept everybody in business so far. We're going to land at about 3,000. 84 acre feet, which is a good thing. And we would even do that when the reserve goes between 15 and 10. But at 10,000, a 75% 0.6 reduction in downstream releases, the 1,026 is a backed into number. The 300 below it is what we've seen as inflow over the last couple of years. So we know that when we get really down, we'll just go inflow matches outflow. The difference was 1,000, so we thought, well, we'll put that downstream and benefit the groundwater basin. But as Brian can tell you, you would not see irrigated agriculture going on, if any. Maybe some in the beginning of the season for a quick crop, but we would just see, you know, the investment's not worth making if you're going to run out of water one-third of the way into the year. So here's that carryover concept. Unused Lopez water for previous year calculated and documented for each member agency. That's in the low reservoir release plan, so that set up everybody's individual account. That went into effect about December 1st, I want to say, when we hit 20,000 acre feet in storage. So that brings us back to the big chart, the four columns to the right. Low reservoir response plan water accounts for water year 15, 16, and we use the term water accounts, and Jeff English Moro Grande can reinforce this. No one intends to use all of this water. This is the water for those agencies to manage in concert with their other supplies, so they don't intend, and the communities haven't used this much water. So we're shifting to sort of a prediction of what we're going to use to an accounting of what's in each agency's account. So you see this carryover. That's the difference in what we started with a year ago and how much we used. So again, Rio Grande started with 3,466, used 2,579. They're going to carry over the difference, 887. There's no percentage coming into it, no putting it all back in the bank. It's individual accounts. We're between 20,000 and 15, so we get full entitlement, 2,290 for Rio Grande. They're going to go in on April 1st with 3,177 acre feet to manage as that agency sees best, and then so on down the line. And you can see some differences here. I'll use Pismo Beach. One of their portfolio elements is state water. And as an aside, the flood control district is able, along with a 20% year, to bring our state water customers up to 100% of their normal allocation. So Pismo Beach is today on state water. They've used their Lopez allocation completely, shifted over to state water. That's part of their management approach. Again, very much focused on reducing groundwater pumping because of the location of their wells, and that's the plan they're implementing. Now, the column to the right at 15,000, if the reservoir should hit 15,000 acre-feet in storage, the LRRP reduces our entitlement number by 10%, not our whole account. So in Arroyo Grande's case, it wouldn't reduce the 3177. The 10% comes off the entitlement. The carryover stays. That's what you brought forward with you.
Mark, those numbers assume the carryover for this year?
Yes.
Okay.
So that carryover is an estimated number based on total deliveries. It's getting pretty close. I think everybody, so far, I haven't got anyone coming up with a radically different number than that. So that looks pretty good. And this focuses in on where we're at then. This is just the right four columns blown up so we can see it on the screen. And what's interesting is to compare the entitlement numbers to the available at 20 and 15. How should I say this? The difference is entitlement. We used to plan. That's what the agency really was shooting to use, plus whatever surplus. Now that the totals at the right, those are available numbers but don't represent what the agencies are planning to use. Each agency has its water conservation plans going, and they have their own drought response plan as to where you know, their entire portfolio lies and whatnot, but that is the amount of water available. So all of this ends up with two recommendations. One of them, the board should follow the contract. It's Article 4, Section C and D, and the Board of Supervisors should declare an amount of 1,231 acre-feet, or as adjusted once we get the March accountings. We think it's going to be close to 1,231. But right next to it, recommendation number two to the Board is to continue to implement the low reservoir response plan that we have all at this point endorsed and are following. So that is the case where the Board says, for the contract, we're declaring this much, and then the agencies would respond. For instance, we would expect Arroyo Grande, whose carryover is 887, they would say, well, okay, we'll request all 622. And the district's response in the district's resolution is, oh, you're short. We will make that up with emergency drought relief water, which we kind of did last August. Contrast that with Pismo Beach. They're offered 242 acre-feet. They're under a different plan, and Pismo Beach would decline surplus. And the 242 goes out through the second round of the other agencies. That's how all of the resolutions that we all adopted all work together, so that we stay consistent with our contracts, and then we also operate in a teamwork fashion to use the contract methods to affect this carryover process. So those are your two recommendations from the staff. But we could stop at that point. About three more slides to talk about where we are and what the TAC is going to do. So you're at the chairman's pleasure.
Yeah, let's just make sure we understand where we are. Just clarify where I think what you said was basically we had the existing contracts, which we have to follow no matter whether we had the low release reservoir plan, but we also have the LRRP, and then we are going to alter that based upon the new plan, and that is what you're trying to explain. That's why we have a technical advisory committee to do all the heavy duty math for us.
Yes, okay. And for me as well.
Just a clarification on your table one in the staff report has some minor differences from the right hand columns on your the large slide you handed out. Is that just because it's a later calculation? Those should be the same, correct?
Yeah, the one that the one I just handed out, the big one.
Right, there's just minor changes from the table one in the report. I assume that's just because it's a later calculation.
Yeah, we're recalculating daily okay. on this.
All right. Any questions?
Yeah, I would actually like to make sure that we go a little bit over the spreadsheet that Mark has so that I can understand it. I'm not inclined to, you know, solely rely on the technical advisory committee, because I think that this advisory committee has an obligation to make sure we understand it as well. And I might, but I'm not sure. So, Mark, you had mentioned the Pismo Beach example.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the big one, where on column J, it would otherwise indicate that they would have 242 acre-feet of surplus water. But on column K, it turns into a zero. And that's because under the LRRP, we are not allocating surplus water on our percentage basis.
It's two things. Okay. We're not allocating the surplus water, and that's the key thing. And the other one is we're not allocating the downstream release as surplus water per the LRRP. But primarily it's because we're doing it on an agency account basis.
And so when we look at Pismo again as an example, where in 14-15 the water available was 1350.
Yes.
And in 14-15 then they're using 1350.
Yes.
So in the statement that you had made that everybody gets to manage their own accounts, then that's the reason why they have zero carryover into next
yes.
year, is because they chose to use all of their Lopez water in the 14-15 year.
Yeah, they did. And they were able to use the all 1350 by the end of, well, mid-February, actually, and
okay.
then shifted over onto their surplus, not surplus, their state water
allocations.
Yeah.
Okay, so that does make sense to me. And now the other thing that I have in as observation here is that when we look at columns M and N, which would then be the 15-16 allocations under two different scenarios, right? And that includes the amount of water that's carrying over from 14-15 as well as the new entitlement water that's being allocated.
Yes.
I think that what we have here is really embedded two different calculations, right? Because one is the amount of water that's carrying over, and then the second calculation is the amount that is being allocated in 15-16. And so the idea is under column N, we're going to take a 10% cut in our 15-16 allocations because we think that we're going to be hitting 15,000 acre feet in storage at some time during the 15-16 year.
Right, and the next three slides I have point out where the conversation was going at the last TAC meeting.
Okay. So I have some other comments specific to Oceano, but I wanted to make sure that I understood the spreadsheet, and I do. And so I'll defer my other comments until later.
So independent from those recommendations, if I may, if there's no other questions at this point.
I do. I'm sorry.
Karen, go ahead.
Thank you. Just so I understand, I think maybe I've written something down wrong here. So under the LRRP water accounts for 15-16, should the lake fall to, or the reservoir, 15,000 acre feet, a 10% reduction in entitlement only?
Right.
It does not include the carryover?
No.
Okay. So, okay, now I understand that. So going back to the Pismo example, whereby you said that they would be offered their surplus, but they would not they wouldn't take it because they have state water. And I just don't understand that concept. Can you kind of explain?
Reason they wouldn't take it is that's laid out in the low reservoir response plan. So Pismo Beach, like all of the agencies, adopted resolutions at their council.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We endorse. It's rather like raising. We promised to follow the low reservoir response plan, and then everybody promised around the table.
So we've essentially already agreed to this strategy. So the question on process then would be, do you actually expect each of the agencies to take additional action, or is the county going to rely on the fact that each of the agencies already adopted the LRRP?
think what we'll do is do a letter exchange to create a record for everyone, so that as we go down the road, I like to use the phrase, if we all win the lottery on the same day, then the next group coming in will understand what the heck we did. So it would be my intent after the Board of Supervisors take action to send a letter out to each of the water managers explaining this, explaining the district's understanding of what the resolutions mean and what then that agency's intent was when they adopted it, and ask people to confirm that I've got it right.
Or maybe just say, let us know if you don't think we have it right.
I love that approach, and I also have a new lawyer who doesn't.
Understood.
Any other questions?
That should do it. Thank you very much.
I'd just make a remark that it's conceivable that we would hit 15,000 this year, given the rate of decline we're seeing.
Yeah. If you wish, let me show you what the graphs show.
Okay. Sure. Let's move on then.
The predictions for the future. This one's not very good, but I'll do my best. Let's see if they're... All right. What this is a planning graph that showed. Jeff's got one. I just had to show it all the way across the wall. So this is a graph that the TAC looks at on a monthly basis. And the green line is the reservoir level. So on the left, we've got reservoir elevations. This is the timeline across the bottom, and these blue bars are labeled with inches. That's a 10-year running average rainfall amount from a company that does these sorts of things. So it's not the last 10 years. They look at the last 100 years of rainfall records and then come up with an average of what happens over 10 years on a month-by-month basis. So we create this graph and say, today, we're right here. If it rained this much in March, which is the average, April and May, the reservoir would trend along this green line. And then we get into next winter, fall, we get these average rainfalls and the reservoir starts to step up. This data, the solid line across, is the 15,000 acre foot in storage line. So you can see that if we get average rainfall, we come down close, but we don't hit the next trigger point and we step back up. There's a light yellow dashed line right here. And that says if this rain doesn't happen, then we hit 15,000 right about that point, which on my screen is September 1st, 2015. That's what the long-range numbers say. So April, May, June, July, August, September, halfway through the water year, we face the prospect of having a 10% cut in our entitlements. So the low reservoir response plan already has this thing called adaptive management. Reservoirs less than 20,000 acre feet. There is a Board of Supervisors declared emergency. Those are the two triggers. The low reservoir response plan is enacted. That happened in December. We hit the initial prescribed actions. We're doing those. And then this box says TAC reviews hydrologic conditions, makes a recommendation if they think we should do something different than what the plan says to the advisory council. Or TAC sees Administrator Sager makes a recommendation over here. Here's the advisory council. So it comes back to your council with a recommendation from the TAC if they believe that we need to do something different. In this case, what they're looking at is, well, should we, based on that previous graph, should we all plan on taking the 10% cut on April 1st, go back to our councils and operate under that scenario? And if so, then we would be back here in May with that recommendation. So that's on the TAC agenda for April, for for some deep discussion, and I'm sure they left the meeting 2 weeks ago. A lot of frowns on the faces, because they have to go back and look at what do our other water sources say, where we are in the conservation, what does our conservation plan in our city or our entity say, what's going to be the consensus of the group to then bring a recommendation to your advisory committee. Now, this is a little bit interesting here, is the advisory council makes that decision, but it is appealable to the Board of Supervisors because they are the ultimate authority. That's a little bit of new ground, and we're using the drought declaration to cover that process. So it could go to the board. I would say that, you know, when we adopted this, the response was if this happened and someone had an issue with it, we would likely pull out all the stops to get that to the Board of Supervisors.
What would be the likely scenario of an appeal? Would that be a single agency that disagreed with the recommendation?
Well, it could be, and that's not defined, could be an agency, it could be someone with a water right, it could be a representative of a resource group or a resource agency, perhaps.
It could be agriculture, if you thought that the municipalities were taking too much water.
Mark, can you go back to the graph before this? Okay, so explain to me one more time the green and the yellow, because I had the green, but then you said if we don't get the rain in the next coming months, that's when it drops down to the yellow. So they're predicting the rain. Can you just go over that one?
Right, correct. So the blue bars represent the rain. Mm-hmm. If that amount of rain happens, then we would expect the reservoir to follow the green line. Mm-hmm. If that amount of rain does not happen, then we would expect the reservoir to follow the yellow line.
And what are those? So are those are months right there? I can't see.
Yeah, this is March, April, May, okay. June, July.
Okay.
And while the scale on this side is total storage in the reservoir, the scale on this side is inches of rain.
So one thing that I'd kind of like to point out in this graph, and it's obviously Mark's working with the best information that's available, but I'm concerned about averages because the watershed is obviously very dry right now. And how quickly is the reservoir really going to respond even if we get some of those average rainfalls? And certainly there's some evidence historically that it takes a while for Lopez to really respond and start filling back up. So this is, you know, the best information that they have. But I think that when we get back here in 2 months and we hear the tax recommendations on how to deal with 15-16 and should we have the 10% cut in entitlement, I think we have to be very conscientious that, you know, we're in a dire situation from the standpoint of the drought. And even if we do get some rain next year, we don't know how much that reservoir is really going to respond and how much it's going to fill, because averages aren't going to work when we've been through a unprecedented drought and that watershed is super dry. So I think we need to, I guess what I'm doing is just sort of setting the tone that I think we need to be very conservative when it comes back to us in 2 months.
Well, this sounds like something that should be forwarded to the TAC on these kinds of issues that Pablo's raising.
Right.
Do you want to respond to that?
Well, yeah, this is what the TAC is looking at,
right?
At their regular monthly meetings, which are, since they're not Brown Act meetings, they can meet at any point in time that the members feel an additional meeting is needed.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
I'm so full of great information. This comes out of the low reservoir response plan, and what the team did was had the consultant. It creates some models. So we said, all right, if we adopt this low reservoir response plan and we do this at 20 and this at 15 and this at 10 and this at 5, how does the reservoir respond? And their answer was, well, it depends on how much it rains. So what they did is put together four different scenarios. These are the colored bars down here. And just to give you a sense, like the upper green bar, that's the average of water years 2011-12 through 13-14. Inflow and rainfall. If that was to come into the reservoir, that's the way the LRRP would cause it to respond. On the other end is the red bar, which is water year 13-14, 2 years ago, if it continued like that. And that, unfortunately, the red one is what we're closest to right now. Even with the LRRP in effect, we're tracking just below the red line. So at our just under 20,000, we're about this point on the graph, and 15 comes out down here somewhere. So these are years along the bottom. If we track from this point with continued repeat of the inflow and rainfall that we've had the last 2 years, then we're going to end up pretty close at this point, which is sometime in early 2017. Obviously, if we get down to here, there's going to be a lot of talk about what else we can do with the state, other water sources, conservation,
right.
Even water sources in the state.
I think one of your earlier points was the way this low reservoir response plan is structured is for each of us own kind of the water, so that encourages conservation. I think that was part of the basis for all of this, was to make sure all of the individual entities are going to be conserving like crazy, because we have a lot of say over what happens to that water.
Yes.
And I think that was the idea behind it.
I think this graph is, you know, really important, because within the last week or so, NASA, a scientist at NASA recently came out with a prediction that California only has 1 year of water left. And this graph indicates that we could be dry at Lopez in 2 years. So we're better than the NASA prediction on a statewide basis. But I'm pretty uncomfortable with only a two-year water supply when Lopez is only one of our water supplies, and we know groundwater is already being stressed and whatnot. So the basic idea behind the LRRP and the adaptive management program is that we're going to try to get the Lopez water supply to stretch out to 3 or 4 years, and that's where some of the other lines are showing. But Mark had indicated that right now we're actually tracking a little bit below even the red line. So I think that, you know, the TAC and coming up with their recommendations on what to do in 14-15, I'm hoping that they're going to take a very, you know, diligent and conservative view on being careful with this water supply.
Karen?
Thank you. Really, I'd really like to get a copy of the, it doesn't have to be the entire slide, but the reservoir storage projections, and then, and this graph as well. Would that be possible?
Yes.
It's very hard for me to see
here
and see there. I can't even tell what the numbers are on the on
yeah,
the
perhaps
left,
if you could just send out the PowerPoint presentation to our committee.
Or the whole thing, whatever's easiest, or whatever
and
whatever the
perhaps to the TAC too is appropriate, at least to the committee.
I think these are really significant numbers that I wasn't aware of, and I know that many people are not, and I think it's really important that people start to understand how dire the situation really is, and I think those two graphs are pretty pretty explicit as to where we're headed. So
we'll certainly have those. We'll have those out to the committees.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
Did you have more presentation, Mark?
That's what I've got.
Okay. So for clarification purposes, we're not talking about the 14-15 water allocation. And whether we're going to be looking at a 10% cutback or not.
No.
We're simply looking at the amount of surplus water.
Right, surplus water, and then confirming the committee's, I would say, commitment in a way to the low reservoir response plan.
Well, okay, so on that point, I certainly, you know, and Oceano is certainly committed to the low reservoir response plan. With respect to the specific numbers that are shown for Oceano, though, certainly our board has a disagreement with those numbers. It indicates that we've used 364 acre feet of Lopez water for water year 14-15, I believe, and therefore would only have 82 acre feet carried over into the 15-16 year. And the board action in December and the correspondence that we sent to the county certainly is not consistent with these numbers. And you had prefaced earlier in the conversation, Mark, a couple of different things. One is that the intent of the LRRP was to provide each agency with the ability to manage their own accounts, and yet Oceano doesn't believe that that's holding true for us. And we really haven't gotten any formal response from our December correspondence. And I don't know much else what I'm going to say. And we don't understand what the position is on the county on not getting a response to the December correspondence, or why the county is reticent in allowing us to manage our water supplies.
Well, interesting comments. I could say that the county staff doesn't see any issues with Oceano's proposal, which is essentially to exchange Lopez water for state water for the same period, so that what this chart would show, to the extent that the amount was, that there would be less Lopez water used, and then the carryover amount would go up, and then the amount of state water that Oceano would be obligated. I think the only difference in that is a variable energy cost. Oceano would be, and I think have agreed to pay that, which is in the big picture nominal. I think where we're apart simply is that the district reads the contracts as requiring that those changes be made in advance and not after the fact. But we also believe that we can make those changes if we have agreement from all other parties to the contract and are more than willing to seek that agreement.
So I guess on the point of after the fact, though, is that the idea that the county doesn't think that Oceano requested any state water until that December correspondence? Because I've gone back and I've researched, and we have at least five pieces of correspondence, including bills that we've paid, to indicate that Oceano has made full state water requests during calendar year 2014.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. I haven't seen those.
Okay, so I guess then in our ongoing discussions, then we'll make sure to get that information over to
definitely.
You. And it might have an effect then on these discussions.
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
Because I have a question.
And could you swing your mic around? It looks like you're not on a mic or any one of the two mics. We don't have a mic over there for you.
Well, first of all, I'm having a hard time following exactly, you know, what the issue is. But I'm wondering if, Pava, what you have laid out is affecting, I guess, if it's occurring with other agencies as well, or if it's just specific to Oceano.
Well, I think that there has been ongoing discussions with Pismo Beach during the past year regarding how much state water they're going to get delivered versus how much Lopez water is going to be delivered. And that's gone back and forth a little bit. But there is a distinction between Oceano and Pismo, because Pismo has water banked in their name in San Luis Reservoir, but Oceano doesn't. So how we approach how we want to manage state water versus how we manage Lopez water is different than how so we have similarities because we both contract for both supplies, but we don't, for example, Oceano does not have the drought buffer agreement, which means that we don't have storage in San Luis Reservoir, and Pismo Beach does. So the specific details on how we try to manage our supplies are a little bit different between Oceano and Pismo Beach. The similarity, again, is that both agencies are looking at how do we want to manage our Lopez versus our state water supplies, and then the differences are that we have, you know, somewhat different approaches on state water. Where it really comes down to on this particular spreadsheet, again, is the line for Oceano and how much we've been treated as taking Lopez deliveries in this past year. But our board basically acted to do is they want all of our deliveries treated as state water deliveries. And because state water is currently stored behind the reservoir and was delivered, we think that that's an appropriate decision that Oceano can make. And then in recent weeks where I've been trying to get into the documents and find out more about it, I think some of the new information that I'm developing is that, in fact, there is a number of pieces of correspondence from the county that would indicate that we did make state water requests early in 2014. And so our most recent correspondence is really trying to make, you know, our final adjustment to those earlier requests.
Yeah, if I could interject here, I think what we need to do is have Oceano and the county get together and work out these details, and maybe can report back at the next meeting what the resolution is, if it changes these numbers materially.
Well,
I think it's very important that we get these squared away. I'm just not sure that we can solve them tonight. Well,
certainly, I don't think that we can, but the preface for the discussion is that there is a surplus water calculation that's on the table, and it is based on certain assumptions on water deliveries in 14-15 to Oceano, and what is laid out is different from what my board believes to be the case. And so I like what Mark has laid out. I like the process. I think the idea that, you know, the correspondence back to the agencies that he talked about and getting the confirmation on living with the LRRP is all good and everything. But I needed to make sure to clarify or to make sure everybody is informed that we're not in agreement with the numbers. The process, the approach, how the LRRP is working, and all those things are good, but I cannot support a declaration of 1,231 acre feet simply because it doesn't reflect the Oceano numbers that my board believes to be true. And I do agree, Chair, that it's going to require some additional work between Oceano and the county. Right. So it's not a, you know, you're going to have to anticipate a no vote. It's not for lack of anything other than we need to continue to work on this issue between Oceano and the county.
So you're taking issue with the 1231 and the recommended
and
motion.
More specifically, I'm taking exception with under column H that shows Oceano State Water, Oceano Lopez deliveries of 364 acre feet. That's inconsistent with what our board action was.
Well, it's probably, I know Pismo had some issues with some of the bookkeeping in the past too, and I think we've gotten those resolved. So I think I agree with you that when this moves forward, that the understandings along the way and how the bookkeeping happens is very important through these letters you're talking about to make sure that we don't have any mistakes that can cause a great deal of anguish down the road, because it's getting very difficult right now with our water supplies. So we want to make sure at least we can agree on what we agreed to. So I think, I guess I'd like to move on at this point, but I think it's very important that we get this correct, that between you and the county, you can work out where the differences are and try to resolve them, and perhaps report back at the next meeting, resolved or not resolved, perhaps.
I agree.
Let me go out to the public. Any public comment before we entertain a motion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the committee. There's two recommendations. Any further discussion? Two recommendations. Again, as I understand it, we're basically trying to ratify what we've already agreed to. We can quibble about the particular numbers, but we're trying to ratify what we've already agreed to recommend the board move forward on it. I think we can do this under one motion or two motions. We
could probably do it could be one motion.
One motion. I'll entertain a motion to, number one, recommend the Board of Supervisors declare surplus water, et cetera, as indicated in the letter to the committee, and also recommend that the Board of Supervisors continue to implement the low reservoir release plan, et cetera, as indicated in the letter here.
Chair Waage, if we take those as second motions, I could certainly support one.
Okay, let's entertain the first one first. Let's, if we want to bifurcate. First, I'll entertain a motion on item number one to declare surplus water. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
A motion is second. Let's have a roll call. Any further discussion? Roll call.
Member Bright?
Yes.
Member Barnich?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Member Ogren?
For reasons previously stated, no.
Member Gehring?
Yes.
And Chairperson Waage?
Yes. Okay, let's all entertain a motion to implement the low reservoir release plan.
Also move.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Member Bright?
Yes.
Member Barnich?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Member Ogren?
Yes.
Member Gehring?
Yes.
Chairman Waage?
Yes. Passes unanimously on the second one with one vote no on the first one. Okay, where are we now? We've completed items 8A and B. Future agenda items, number 9.
Just a placeholder. We'll move these forward when appropriate.
And we've already talked about having the another agenda item brought back.
A memo on the conflict of interest.
On the conflict of interest.
And also the 15-16 water allocation from Lopez.
15-16 water allocations, okay.
Yeah, we can call that the adaptive management status or recommendations from the TAC.
Okay, any other future agenda items we need to discuss? Committee member comments? Seeing none.
I'll just note this marks March marks a year anniversary of the Board of Supervisors declaring the drought emergency, okay. And March 24th will be the next update, and I think it will be a little more in depth than the last few. So if you're interested in it, tune in.
So March 24th. So that means the agenda's probably been submitted for internal processing. Are you speaking much to Zone 3 on it?
Well, I have to remember. We do what we call a one-year look ahead. This will be the third time we've looked ahead for a year. Every 3 months, we look ahead a year. I think for Oceano, for Zone 3, we remind the board the low reservoir release plan. And I think we have the line graphic probably in the presentation. The board's seen that before to emphasize the need for water conservation. And then we'll remind the board that we intend to be back with the surplus water and LRRP confirmation on April 14th is the goal for that hearing.
Any other comments?
I got a comment. Jim? No, go ahead.
No, I think mommy.
Just.
Oh. Since we have a couple of new members, I thought I would mention that I've read the book entitled The West Without Water Again. And if you haven't read that book, you probably should, because there's considerable scientific evidence that says that the last 150 years of climatic information that we've thought is normal climate for the West was normal, but there's considerable evidence that we've been going through quite a wet period for the last 150 years or so, and that it wouldn't be an unusual at all for this kind of climate that we're experiencing now in terms of the dry conditions to continue for as long as several hundred years.
That's frightening.
I've read some scientific papers that say that in the Southern Sierras where they've made the measurements, that they found trees growing at the bottom, pretty much far down, like 40 feet below the existing elevation of the lake, which indicates it was a far drier period for over 200 years.
In Lake Tahoe?
Lake Tahoe in the south, yeah.
Yeah, right.
They find dead trees at the
way below the
surface level of these lakes, which says this was 900 to 1100,
right.
1,000 years ago. So what we're having now, I agree, might be abnormal, and the normal is much drier, so... Mm-hmm. It's going to be a rough ride.
The other thing I would mention is I bumped into John Reynolds. He's Tom Reynolds' brother.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Brian. And they're both long-term farmers in the Roy Graney Valley. And John told me today that the water well conditions are the worst he's ever seen in his lifetime. And he gave me an example of a well just south of St. Patrick's Church in the Roy Graney Valley where... Mm-hmm. Typically, you hit bottom at 100 feet, and most of those agricultural wells are 100 feet deep. And this particular well is typical of many in the valley, and the water level is standing at 90 feet. So keep in mind that the long-term safe yield of the groundwater basin is intimately tied to the downstream releases from Lopez. And so if we're contemplating, and probably are contemplating, drastic changes in the amount of downstream release, we're going to see even worse conditions in the groundwater conditions than we're seeing today because of that. So those are my comments.
Okay. Well, and to follow up on that, so Oceano's in the middle of our Prop 218 process to implement our conservation rates and to reinvigorate. You know, like a lot of the communities, we've done pretty well in conservation, but we're ramping it up because we didn't get the rain this year, so we're going to that next level, and I think we all have to do that.
Okay, see no other comments. Our next meeting is tentatively scheduled for Thursday, May 21, 2015, at 6:30 p.m., Pismo Beach City Hall.
There we go.
This meeting's adjourned.